Welcome to the premier episode of Catino Talks Mets, the newest podcast on Metsmerized Online. This will be different than any podcast you've ever heard about the Mets. Different because it will present a positive glass half full take on your beloved team. I will also bring you into the corners of the Met Clubhouse with exclusive content with Met players and team staff you can't hear anywhere else. Most of you know me from both this site and my appearances on ESPN. But I must tell you, I'm so proud to be a part of Metsmerized, a site that covers this team better than anybody. And this podcast will also feature some of my best Twitter followers who will illustrate why they love the Mets so much. On this particular podcast, you'll hear from two former Mets whom we all love. Cliff Floyd, I conversed with on the greatness of David Wright, and Ron Swoboda, who is in all of our hearts because of the catch in Game 4 of the 69 World Series. The interview with Swoboda will give you a view of my book set to hit the bookstores in June, The Miracle of 1969. It'll take you through my journey with the team as a 9-year-old fan living in the Bronx in that great championship season. Before we get to the interviews, I want to touch upon the 2019 Mets and why I think this will be a force to be reckoned with in the National League East this season. Brody Van Wagenen has reshaped this team in the best way possible, adding Robinson Cano to a roster that has the best starting rotation in the sport. The team will score plenty of runs as these veterans, coupled with Michael Conforto, Brandon Nimmo, Ahmed Rosario, and Peter Alonso, will bring a balanced lineup to the ballpark every day with a plethora of quality RBI bats and the proper combination of youth and veteran leadership. But the biggest upswing in this team right now is the bullpen, as Mickey Callaway will have the sport's top closer along with Jerry Familia and Seth Lugo to back up a rotation that will give the National League lineups fits. Van Wagenen also has made this a deeper team with acquisitions like Jed Lowry, which will provide relief for the injuries that happen every year, or will give Callaway the chance to mix and match if players are slumping. A.J. Pollock remains a missing piece, but that is one that I think is still in play as this market continues to diminish. Patience is a key with Pollock, and Van Wagenen has shown he can be patient when needed, but is also not afraid to strike quickly. My sense is this could last well into spring training, but I do feel confident he will be added to the Met roster. This team will be a playoff contender, and to me, only the Cubs, Cardinals, and Dodgers have better rosters, and none of those teams reside in the NL East. Even if the Phils, Braves, or Nats add pieces, the Mets will be a tough out in this division, and to me, will emerge as division champion by year's end. The only thing that upsets me is that David Wright will not be here to enjoy it as a player. The night that honored him at the end of the season was one of the greatest things I've ever witnessed for a man who gave so much to this fan base and a player that Cliff Floyd remembers well as he chatted with me on that historic night. Cliff, obviously this is a very special day for David Wright. Can you talk about what it was like to play on the same team with him in that 2006 season?
I mean, it was everything that you look forward to in, as far as playing with the youth, the new guy and the guy that's supposed to take you over the hump. And it was a lot of times he carried us. I took him under my wing, but I think a lot of people really think that, I taught him so much. I didn't. I taught him how to make time for himself. I taught him how to, do certain things that's going to allow him to be out here and playing the game the right way. But when I say teach him, it was what I was taught. And you learn things over your career that you want to bottle up and pass on. You know what I mean? And I think that's important for all of us, for him to pass on to the next generation, for guys in that clubhouse to see what he's endured and how much he's worked to get to this moment. Such a deserving time for him, to walk off. It's not ideal, obviously. But it's the way he wants to. And you get a jersey up and you move on to the next life.
Cliff, when you talk about baseball today, players move from team to team. It happens. We do hot stove shows based on that all season long. But for him to have the Met uniform on from day one to the last day, how special is that for a player?
Well, how many guys get the opportunity? Not a lot, right? And I think that's one thing he can cherish is that, you put that one jersey on, you can take that one jersey off and pass it. It's big because in this sport, in any sport, they got to love you here. They got to have enough money for you. They got to have a lot of things got to go right for you to stay on one team for a long time. And you got to play well. Man, when you don't play well, you obviously, it's time to move on. And Sometimes you want more money and you move on. A lot of things play a big part in careers. And when you get a chance to put one uniform on for your whole career, man, a lot of guys speak on it. When you hear Tripper Jones, what he says, you know, guys talk about playing that you know, for one team. It's not one person in the stadium don't know who David Wright is. Not one person, you know, and we've moved from Shea to here. So new people, personnel, and front office has moved. He's still here, you know, and those people in the front office know David Wright. And that to me is special.
Sometimes when you encounter a player as a young player like you guys did with David, you can see things in him, that accountability. But the two H's, hunger and humility, did he have it as well as any player you've been around?
Man, it's hard to teach. It's hard to find. And I don't know if you can teach it either. When you say it's hard to teach, certain things you can't teach. That's upbringing, great parenting, being able to have a passion about something you really want. You know, I think that's important. He wanted it. He wanted to be great. People ask me today, you know, or they don't ask me. They tell me. They go, man, I didn't know he was that good. I go, well, shit. you Google. Back of bubblegum cards. I don't know. I knew he was great from the day he got here in 04. I knew he was going to be great. Not good, like great. And he our new age poster child of analytics. And he came in the game. He was that guy. Across the board, he did things that you want every player to do now that makes $300 million. So, you know, to have the game plan down and idea what you want to do every single day, it don't happen overnight. To know he wanted to go right center, to know the organization is going to move the fences in for your star player to go right center. I mean, think about all the things that's happened in this man's career. The only unfortunate thing is injuries, and they derail a lot of star players from being great.
David Wright is such a big part of the history of this organization, a team that has so more history than any of us realize, with that wonderful year of 1969 at the top of that history list. As you all know, my book, The Miracle of 1969, will come out in June, and I've interviewed so many greats from that team. One of my favorite sessions was with right fielder Ron Swoboda, who talked to me about that wonderful season coupled with his love for both Gil Hodges and Tom Seaver. Ron, you know, when you talk about that 69 season, was there a period of time during the season where you said, this is really clicking in here? Is there a period of time, was it the Cubs series in the middle of the season?
Well, we always played good against the Cubs. It certainly wasn't when we played against the Astros, who beat us 10 out of 12 that year. But I think early on when we were flopping around 500 into June, and we started a series in Shea, and then went on the West Coast, and we played those West Coast teams pretty good, all three of them, and we rolled through about 11 straight wins, and I think the team went, maybe we got something here with all those young arms, and that's when they made the deal for Clendenin. That's when they traded Steve Renko and three other guys, Kevin Collins and those guys, and Clendenin came in here. That's when I think they started taking our management took us seriously. And from that point on, we were a little different club. And we had gone, you know, by the time we had gone through the league twice, we felt like, wow, we're competitive. We can play with everybody but the Astros. We didn't have to beat the Astros like the Cubs. Cubs were in our division. And we played some really solid series against them, really tough series against them. And I think, you know, it really wasn't until the end of August, 1st of September, when we ran them down. They augured a little bit, and we were on cruise control and turbo. And blew by them in early September, and that's when we rolled by them and never looked back.
Gil Hodges, what was it like being around him and everything he represented?
You know, Gil could simplify things that a lot of managers could make complex. I think if you manage to a simple idea, then, you know, it's like a good jazz player. You know, you resolve something that's pretty complex in a simple way, and it comes through it hits your ears in a way you understand it. You don't need to know all the workings, why it works. You just know it sounds good. Well, he did things on a baseball diamond that played well, that we understood. And he would do some interesting, creative things, you know, put four outfielders out there or bring in me to play first base and dare a pitcher to bunt in a situation. He never was behind the game. Hodges really understood what he wanted to do all the time, and you were aware of the fact that, you know, you didn't have to worry about your manager getting behind the play at all, ever.
I want to talk about a couple of performances you had. One in September, in a game which Steve Carlton struck out 19 batters, and you went yard on him twice. What was that like, Ron? I mean, you hit him well.
You know, I didn't really. Who hit him well? I don't know who hit him well. I didn't hit him well. I think I got that and about two singles off him, and that was the extent of it. But you know, it was a funny thing. We were playing in St. Louis, the old ballpark. The second iteration of Busch Stadium, and they had a machine in left field, and I asked Ralph Kiner if he'd feed me some balls through this wheel machine down there. I said, I'm just not feeling right, you know. And we didn't have anything like hitting coaches and stuff like back then. They were around, but we didn't really feature any. Yogi, you know, and Yogi knew how to hit.
Right.
But I'm not sure he could tell you how to hit. Yogi might say something like, if you can't hit it, don't swing at it. And you'd go, well, what about two strikes, Yogi? Well, then you might have to swing at it. You know, it's like, well, all right, thank you for clearing that up. And that's a joke, but Yogi knew how to hit. You know, he was a good bad ball hitter and a better good ball hitter. And so, but, it, you know, we didn't have coaches as such. But Ralph went out there with me, got permission, and fed me some balls and just looked at me and said, how's that feel? You hit that one good? Yeah, try your hands here. All right, good. All right, ready? And, you know, and just looked at you and gave you some feedback. And I got in a good space. And, you know, here you go up against a guy who's got great stuff. And, you know, I banged him twice in a game where he was as good as he was ever in his career. And I hit... He struck out 19. That was a record in the major leagues, and he had me two strikes when I hit the home run, and struck me out twice. So, it could have been nothing, and it turns out to be one of the best games I ever had.
Another thing in that September, you guys had a doubleheader against the Pirates, where you won 2-1-0 games where the pitcher drove in each run. I mean, do you start to think that you're blessed when you see something like that?
I don't know about blessed, but you're. But something's working for you. You know, I think we had great pitching, and we felt like our pitching could keep us in ball games. And, you know, you get two games like that and in a doubleheader, and Don Cardwell goes five innings and drives in the go-ahead run, and then Kuzman went nine with a shutout and drove in the only run. And you win that game. And you go, you know, this is getting scary because it all seems possible.
And now, getting to the actual World Series with the Orioles, something Buddy had said to me years ago where Buford leads off with a home run, and as Buford's running around
that
second.
I should have caught in right field.
That's right. You came close to it.
No, I should have caught it. I didn't play it well. I was so damn nervous. I thought I almost broke myself.
What Buddy said is Buford's running past, and Buford looked at him and said, home run. Buddy said, well, first.
No, he said, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Yes.
And Buddy said, I didn't know what to say to him. Like, he said, I'd love to have thought of saying, well, you ain't seen nothing yet either. But he said, I couldn't get it out.
That's great stuff. And then when you guys get back here, you know, I've talked to Earl Weaver. You know.
Well, we split with them in Baltimore. And I think here's the thing you better keep in mind. The Orioles played in the American League, and we played in the National League, and I think the National League, depth-wise, in terms of talent, was a notch or two above the American League. That doesn't mean their best team can't beat our best team, but I think we came through a tougher test to win the National League, and so there was a golden opportunity for the Orioles not to take us lightly, but to look at them and go, am I glad it's them,
right,
without knowing us and without knowing what we've been through.
And then no conversation would be complete without talking about the catch in Game 4. It's a tight game. Seaver's on the mound. Brooks Robinson at the plate. Take us through what was going through your mind as that line drive was coming towards you.
Well, I had taken thousands of balls in the outfield because I had made such a mess of it so many times. If anybody's ever, you forget what Shea Stadium looked like, but if you look up at the top of these lights here at Citi Field, and this is a beautiful place with architecture galore. The architecture at Shea Stadium, it was like a big globe theater on triple deck. It was a high stadium where a lot of balls never get out of the seats. And where, if the lighting is odd and you're not sure yourself, I made a mess of it. So I worked with Eddie Yost, got me on the end of the fungo bat, and he hit me from about 150 feet, line drives and ground balls, left, right, over my head, in front of me. I wanted to work on reading the ball off the bat. You read the ball right off the bat, things are going to get better for you right away. And that's what I worked on. Worked on my footwork in the outfield. You're catching the ball also every time. And I played it all, practiced it all at speed. It wasn't tra-la-la. It was at game speed. Otherwise, what are you doing? And I got better. I got much. I wanted Hodges not to put Rod Gasper in as a defensive replacement. It drove me crazy that he did it. I understood why. I wanted him to look and go, I don't think I need to do that move. And he did finally.
And he didn't do that move. And lucky for him, he didn't, because then he had Gaspar to pinch run, right, to score the winning run. Now, when you talk about after that World Series
is
over.
You're good with your history now. Okay.
When you talk about the World Series and it's over now and you have the parade and stuff, what is that like for those of us that have never experienced anything like that as a professional? What is that like?
You felt like the biggest deal in the Big Apple. And for a while there, you felt like. The other thing was you felt gratified that you had given the city something. And you had given these fans who had followed you from those 100 lost seasons, you'd given them a present. And to ride down the street in a convertible and everybody's got a grin on their face, and you felt like, well, I had something to do with putting it there. And that was a great time, because don't forget, we had a lot of social unrest and the war in Vietnam and all kinds of identity politics going on then, gay rights going on, women's rights, civil rights, and anti-war stuff that was pretty angry. And in the midst of all of that, there was this guy that went up on the moon, Neil Armstrong. And maybe something even less predictable, the Mets win a World Series. Holy mackerel.
And one final question for you. When I looked at that team as a young kid, and I first started following the Mets in like 67. When Seaver came to me, that was one thing that kind of changed things. And when Hodges came, that was a second thing that changed it. You being around for before, during, and after, is that pretty right?
Look, I think in that year when they picked up Clendenin and gave us another bat in the lineup with some power, Seaver came to us in 67, and Tom Seaver was the Tom Seaver that went to the Hall of Fame from day one. There wasn't any, this little kid's got to get his feet on the ground and used to pitch in a big league. There wasn't any of that. Tom Seaver showed up, and he was Tom Seaver from day one. There wasn't any break-in period. And all he had to do was stay healthy and accumulate the numbers. And he's going to the Hall of Fame. And Kuzman, obviously, I think that was a big one. And then that whole pitching staff, really. But we were also a pretty good defensive team. And Hodges just made good moves and made used his people in a way that kept everybody ready. Platooning, it's wonderful if you've got good options because you keep everybody ready and you want to play guys in the second game of a doubleheader and they haven't played in 5 days. Well, you're not as smart when guys aren't ready to play. Hodges kept everybody ready to go.
Thank you for your time, and you're always going to be a name that Met fans love forever. Understand that, please.
There ain't no forever at my age.
I hope you all enjoyed the premier podcast of Catino Talking Mets, and I will take you through the journey of this team as they try to return to the postseason. And I will also be taking you back to 1969 with stories, interviews, and contests which will make you all feel like you were there, especially the younger Met fans. I will also be setting up interviews with some of my best Twitter followers on the podcast in the Why I Love the Mets segment. We will be with you every step of the season, from spring training through the end of the year, including podcasts with the Mets on the road when they invade places like Philly, D.C., Atlanta, and the Bronx. You will hear my exclusive one-on-one Met interviews with the players, but you will also get an honest view of what is going on in the Met clubhouse, and not a painted view to validate a negative narrative. You will get the truth in a glass-half-full approach, but nonetheless, you will get the truth. I will also be writing tons of posts on Metsmerize Online, which has become the defining portal of the Met brand. Mets Nation lives on this site, a place that is ready to become the number one setting for Met fans to convene, chat, and yes, debate, but do it in a respectful fashion. I am building a Met bandwagon, so hop on board. There's plenty of room for all of you as the Mets get ready to embark on a historic season. Catino Talks Mets will help you savor the 2019 Mets, the team you love. Baseball is the greatest game in the world because once it gets inside your soul, it will never leave. And like a best friend, it will be there for you every waking moment. Thanks for listening to my premier podcast, and who knows, you might be on the next episode. How can you be, you ask? Write a brief message on the site why you love the Mets. Tell me about your first Met game or your favorite Met moment. Catino Talking Mets is your podcast, too, and I want to hear from all of you. Till the next version of Catino Talks Mets, so long, everyone, and of course, let's go Mets.